Resolute Square.
There was also maintained what was called an enemies list, which was rather extensive and continually being updated.
Democrats want Republicans dead.
Where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay?
The women with the least likelihood of getting pregnant are the ones most worried about having abortions.
On January 6th of 2021, you had tens of thousands of people peacefully protesting.
No, it's not a right-wing conspiracy theory. It's not QAnon. It's real.
I'm Rick Wilson, and this is The Enemies List.
Our guest today on The Enemies List is Isaac Arnsdorf. He is a Washington Post reporter who has been embedded deep in MAGA world for several years now and is one of the most keen observers of what I think is an overlooked aspect of Trump's presence in the political stage right now. And that is that he has built an entirely separate political culture in this country. And Isaac's brand new book called Finish What We Started is a fantastic look inside of this world about the new people on the scene in the Republican world, how different they are from the past, and the impact they're having and the strategy behind what they plan to do if Donald Trump continues to stay either A, in this position he's in now as the leader of the party, or B, as president for a second term. So Isaac, thank you so much for coming on the program. Really appreciate having you here.
Thanks so much, Rick. It's great to be here.
So when you wrote this book, you'd been reporting on the MAGA movement, on Trump's movement for a while. You've looked at, you know, a lot of the things that surrounded it and a lot of the impacts of the end game of the first administration and the changes in the Republican Party. Talk to us a little bit about who's running this new revolution inside what was the Republican Party before Trump.
Well, part of my reporting in the book has been about how bottom up it's been, how much it's actually been driven by the movement as distinct from Trump as the leader. I mean, when I started reporting this book in early mid 2021, Trump was kind of out of the picture. You know, he was basically in hiding in Mar-a-Lago. It really wasn't clear that he was going to reemerge, and it was not inevitable that he was going to be the Republican nominee again. And a huge part of what paved the way for that comeback, what made it possible for him to become the Republican standard bearer again, was the work of people at the ground level who rewrote the story of January 6th, which many of them had personally experienced, right. And developed this new story about how Republicans, fellow Republicans, had let Trump down and sold Trump out. And that was the reason that they failed. And the solution that Steve Bannon had a big part in popularizing was to take over the party from the bottom up,
right?
Cleanse the party of anyone who didn't accept that the 2020 election was stolen, and put the party in a better position to make sure that it didn't repeat that again in the future, repeat that from their perspective mistake. And then it really happened again. You know, there was another moment in the immediate aftermath of the midterms when Republicans underperformed and did so much worse than all the expectations. Another moment of political weakness for Trump, when again, it was not at all clear that he was going to retain his primacy. And the fact that by that point, the party organization had become dominated by MAGA devotees was a huge part in, again, helping him have another comeback to be where he is now.
One of the things that it's been, look, and I'm a guy who grew up in Republican politics. I came up from the minute I was out of college, I worked in Republican politics and government. And I think people have underestimated how vulnerable the state systems, the committee man, committee woman systems, the local party chairman systems, the county committee systems. I think Bannon, to his dark credit, understood that, and And it came out of one of his guests basically saying, you could take over the whole party. You don't have to do a third party, Steve. You could do a, you could just take over the Republican Party because it's got all these vulnerabilities for simple local grassroots takeovers.
Right. A lot of these positions were empty and they were just there for the taking, or even in cases where they were contested, you know, if you turned out enough of your people and the energy and the enthusiasm was on the MAGA side, then it wasn't that hard to run the traditional Republicans out of those positions. And after the midterms, when it looked like maybe it was that moment to for the party to steer back toward the middle and reject Trump and all his MAGA candidates who lost, at that point it was too late because all the positions of authority within the party had already been taken over.
You tell the story in this book of in a chapter you call Carrizona, which is the Arizona in the wake of both Carrie Lake and Donald Trump. You tell the story of a traditional sort of Republican local activist named Kathy Petsis. Tell us how that story flowed, because I think people will find that it's a really interesting exemplar of what's happening, I think.
Yeah, Kathy is, she calls herself an OG Republican. I mean, she literally grew
my
up.
My kind of person.
she literally grew up in the Republican Party. Her uncle was the state chair when mm-hmm. she was a kid. She spent her Saturdays at the party headquarters licking envelopes. She was a page, a floor page at the 1980 convention when Reagan won the nomination. She was co-chair or co-president of the Teenage Republicans. And, you know, being a Republican is so core to her identity. And she's one of the most active, most dedicated door knockers in all of Arizona. And all of a sudden, in the aftermath of 2020, she had all these people coming into her local district party committee telling her that she didn't know anything about voting, because otherwise she would know how fraudulent it was, and that she wasn't a real Republican. And I won't give away too many spoilers,
right.
but one of the strands of the book has to do with the struggle that Kathy has in confronting how the party is changing around her and her place in the party going forward, and where that leaves her, because she's still a Republican. It's still important to her to be a Republican. The party is still important to her. She's not a Democrat. She doesn't want to vote for Democrats. And there's a small but material slice of the electorate that finds themselves in that position in 2020 and 2022 and again in 2024. And in an election that is a game of inches, that can matter.
These are my people, as I like to say. But no, I think you've exactly hit on a demo of people who you know, and you even talk about it in the book. Like at one point, she's watching Biden's speech in Arizona about democracy, and was moved by it. I mean, still wanted to be a John McCain Republican, a George H.W. Republican, a Ronald Reagan Republican. But I do think that is something that the normies, as Bannon would call them, do not understand the passion of the grassroots and the Republican base now, and how driven they are by things that don't even make sense to people who are from the pre Breitbart, pre Trump era in politics. There's something about politics you may or may not know. There is a general amount of sitting around talking after the end of a political day, whether you're with other consultants or donors or supporters, and occasionally there are cocktails. And I'll tell you, at 60, I don't bounce back the next day like I used to. So I have to make a choice. You can either keep circulating, keep talking, keep doing the things, having a great night, frankly, or you could have a great next day. And that was a choice that I used to face until I found ZBiotics. ZBiotics is a pre-alcohol probiotic drink. It's the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. And look, I was skeptical, but I discovered how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into this toxic byproduct in your gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration or anything else, that's to blame for your rough next day. So ZBiotics produces this enzyme that breaks this byproduct down. If you remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, you'll feel your best the next day. Whenever I have a ZBiotics before drinks, I notice the difference the next day. Even after a night out, I can get back up in the day and write ads and do podcasts and talk to the media and do all the work that I do every single day without worry. I was on the fence about it initially. I'm not a guy who is easily swayed by marketing, but one of the first times I tried it, we had gone out to a big dinner with a bunch of friends. There was a lot of wine, and I tried it. And the next day I was like, oh, this is the real deal. So if the election's coming and you're out there either partying or drowning your sorrows, the next day, you'll feel a lot better if you take ZBiotics the night before. Go to ZBiotics.com/Wilson to get 15% off your first order when you use Wilson at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/Wilson and use the code Wilson at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times.
Yeah, we see that transformation happen sort of through Kathy's eyes, you know, down to watching the Bannon podcast where this it's called the precinct strategy, where this idea for taking over the party debuts, and just sort of wondering what the appeal of that is, but then finding herself interviewing applicants to be on her district committee, the people who are inspired by that very idea.
When you're talking to these folks in the course of reporting this book out since 21, they were told by Trump beginning in the fall, late summer, early fall of 2020, that the election was going to be stolen, it was going to be fraudulent, the Democrats were going to cheat. He was pre-gaming the whole thing. He was setting this whole thing up. And since then, there has been zero evidence of any of these conspiracies ever. They've had trial after trial of you know, Trump's lawyers argued something like 70 different cases about this, and none of it came to fruition. How do these people reconcile the fact that the conspiracy is made out of nothing with continuing to believe that? Because now it has sort of become, I think, a foundational aspect of the identity of a lot of these political, these newly political Republicans in the states and in the MAGA movement. How do they reconcile that there's no there there?
Well, it's an article of faith. And it's long been an article of faith in the conservative movement. Barry Goldwater wrote about this in 1960, that the United States was intrinsically a conservative country, that the U.S. was a right-leaning country, right of center. And basically that was taken as a given no matter what the election results were. And so if you start with that as a premise, then and then you throw in a lot of Trump bombast, then what you get is, you know, the way that he says it is this country doesn't belong to them. This country belongs to you. And, you know, what the stolen election myth is really about, it's, the, you know, the details don't matter. That's what makes it non-falsifiable. You know, if it's not the machines, then it's this or it's that. Or it's always changing because what it's really about is this feeling, this premise about who America belongs to and who the government is supposed to work for and what the country is supposed to look like. And that's what makes it so powerful. And that's also what makes it so impossible to argue with.
So one of the key architects of this current moment we're in is Steve Bannon. And you talk a lot about Bannon in the book, about the role he plays in not only promoting this precinct strategy, but in terms of framing this enormous ongoing culture war and this ongoing political schism in the country. And I've written and talked a lot about Bannon too. Steve Bannon knows this is all bullshit, right? He knows he's making this up.
Well, making what up? I mean,
like the voter fraud stuff. He knows Donald Trump lost the election, but I mean, I was curious if you had any sort of insight on like the contradictions between, you know, somebody who is a fairly smart and sophisticated person who knows better. I mean, that's one of the things that always bothers me about him is he bitches and moans all the time. Like, oh, the elites look down on the MAGA base. I don't think anybody looks down on them more than a guy like Bannon who knows what he's doing and knows it's a lie, but wants the power from it.
I don't know. I mean, if it's a mask, I've never seen it slip. I can certainly think of times when he's been more forceful in insisting on it than others.
Okay.
But what he was very upfront about is how he thinks about political movements. And one of the things that he explains to me was taking inspiration from a philosopher named Eric Hoffer, wrote at the beginning of the 50s about mass movements and recognizing common characteristics across nationalism and communism or any kind of mass movement. And that the way that a movement and a movement leader appeals to people who are frustrated in their lives and gives them an opportunity to form a new identity through association with this movement, that is how Bannon is approaching MAGA.
I do love that you got the Ronald Radosh quote in there about when Bannon said he was a Leninist, and Radosh, who was a traditional old school conservative thinker, was kind of horrified because it's like, you know, that's not one of the arguments you would expect to hear from somebody as an actual conservative. But I mean, Bannon does see himself, I think, as a kind of showman / political strategist / consigliere to whatever movement he's trying to bring to life. I think he's actually been more successful than a lot of Democrats would like to admit in reshaping the way that, I mean, he's had a really powerful normative impact on how Republicans think and talk in the last 10 years.
Yeah. And when he calls himself a Leninist, I mean, he's not really, he doesn't mean ideologically, he means more tactically. Right. And that's a Hoffer thing. Also, this idea that like, actually the ideological content is like kind of fungible, right? What matters is the identification with a cause. And I think specifically, for the purposes of this story, what he's talking about is, you know, Lenin's great innovation was the Revolutionary Party. And the moment, the opportunity that Bannon saw after January 6th was to take the amorphous MAGA movement and put it into the structure of the Republican Party. And that's what's ended up being so effective at institutionalizing Trumpism inside the institutional home of the GOP.
One of the things I think is a curiosity about that is, you know, Bannon's famous, you know, for being one of these like no enemies to my right guys. Is it something about the desire to have that identity cast in this new party? Is it something about these MAGA voters that they think they're under so much threat and pressure and strain and potential destruction that they're willing to accept people into their party that 30 years ago or even 10 years ago, they would have said, yeah, no, thanks. I'll pass on the alt-right guys. I don't really want to be associated with the crazy Proud Boy types or whatever. But it seems like Bannon's no enemies to my right philosophy is kind of really steeped well down into the sort of culture of the party.
Well, look, you know, in your experience as a political advisor, what are you trying to do? You're trying to win an election. You're trying to get to 50% plus one, right?
Yep.
And you're looking for the path of least resistance to 50% plus one. And Bannon's doing something different. He's trying to completely completely upend and redefine the party coalitions. If the easiest path to 50% plus one is like Trump's base plus the traditional Republicans, he's not interested. He's not interested in keeping the traditional Republicans because he sees that as incompatible with MAGA. He would much rather go out and find new untapped MAGA reservoirs in people who vote infrequently or don't vote at all.
Right.
And that's what he sees as his path to having a national populist right-wing party and a national elitist globalist left-wing party, and he thinks that if you define the political landscape that way, then the Republicans will win. That's the world he's trying to put us in.
I think there's a really interesting, maybe, strange moment of irony, is that, you know, the idea that Bannon has, I've heard him say this, I've heard him say this directly, that he believes there's this global left-wing movement that's ready to make people eat bugs and live in, freeze in the dark, the whole sort of cliche thing. But really, the MAGA movement has become part of this global populist movement, and watching that realignment inside the Republican base is fascinating to me, because these were people who were not pro-Putin prior to the influence of guys like Trump and Bannon on the party. And now it's like, I can't quite parse if they think it's just because, Vladimir Putin is like them as a conservative in some weird way, or if they are just looking to be like, sort of oppositional defiant disorder about, all the normies say we shouldn't, but we're going to like him anyway. But it seems like that movement is much more cohesive than any sort of international progressive movement at this point in our history.
Well, there definitely is an element of MAGA that is organically anti-intervention. Some people say isolationist, but some people object to that. So we'll say anti-intervention. And so some of the opposition to aid to Ukraine is coming from that. And then, I mean, another element of what's going on when you see poll results about support for Putin or whatever, it's just kind of people giving what they understand to be the partisan right answer, right? It's like when questions get politicized enough, they sort of just, the responses just revert to their partisan mean.
So Isaac, as you reported this, and again, one of the reasons I really appreciated reading this book, I read it over the weekend in one sitting. It is a great sort of anthropological study of the Republican base as it is today, the MAGA base as it is today. What was the most surprising thing in your reporting here? What was it what revelation in this reporting left you like laying awake at night going, oh my God, that's something?
Well, when I was reporting it ahead of the midterms, the thing that kept me up at night was that having a lot of people who really believed in fraud and criminal activity going on in and around polling places would lead someone to take matters into their own hands and disrupt the actual casting or counting of ballots in a way that couldn't be remedied first of all, that would be dangerous to people, but that also would make it impossible to know what the free and fair result would be. So, in 2020, the interference happened after, like at the certification part. So that didn't end up happening in the midterms, thankfully. Everyone was on best behavior, which is wonderful. And I still worry about that again in this election with the every time Trump glorifies the January 6th rioters and calls them heroes and patriots, as one political scientist explained it to me, he's saying that violence and criminal activity is justified in the pursuit of his power. And that's a very dangerous message. And again, as this political scientist said, it's as simple as accepting the result. In a democracy, we make decisions based on voting, not based on violence. And until it's as simple as that, and until Trump says he'll accept the outcome of an election and there's no place for violence, we're in a very dangerous place.
I think that's right. Well, folks, the book is Finish What We Started. It is a contemporary look inside the MAGA movement, how the Republican Party has so fundamentally changed underneath us. It is written by Isaac Arnsdorf, who, tell us where folks can find you on social media, Isaac.
Well, the best place is WashingtonPost.com.
There it is. Yes.
You can also follow me with my very hard to spell name, I Arnsdorf, IARNSDORF.
Thank you so much for coming on the program today, Isaac, and best of luck. And we'll have you on the show again soon, because I suspect this is a topic we will be covering more as the election goes on.
Thanks so much, Rick.
Hey, Speaker Mike Johnson. I know that you're big on being a very manly man, a very straight, heterosexual, manly, straight man. So why don't you act like a goddamn man for once? Why don't you sack up against your critics and your snipers in the house and do the right thing for once? Why don't you do the right thing for once in your life? Why don't you stand up and bring the Ukraine bill to the floor? You can do this. You should do this. You know you should do this. You're going to lose your job anyway, Bubba. You're going to lose your job. Marge or somebody else is going to snipe you, and they're going to take your job. Why not go out like a man on your own two feet? Why don't you go out with honor and say, I'm going to be willing to sacrifice the remaining hours, days, weeks, or whatever it is of your speakership so that you can do the right thing to save the world from the cancer of a resurgent Soviet communist movement led by Vladimir Putin pushing itself into Europe. Because that's what happens if you keep this aid held up for another damn day. And until then, you are on the enemy's list.
Thanks again for listening to The Enemies List. If you have any comments, questions, or if there's someone you'd like to hear on the podcast, hit me up on Twitter at TheRickWilson. Thanks again for the wonderful support you've shown the pod. We're growing fast. It really helps if you will share this with your friends, your family, and anyone else who, like us, is trying to save democracy. While you're at it, if you could rate and review the podcast, I would be very much appreciative. I know this is the sort of thing you've heard a billion times. Please rate, review, like, blah, blah, blah. But you need to do it. It really does help us a lot. We are slaves to the algorithm, my friends. And if you do this, it will help get the pod out further. Anyway, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time. And remember, whatever you do, stay off the list.